Want to learn everything you possibly can from an institutional guy about real estate? Well, on this edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast, we're going to talk about real estate for wealth building. Stay tuned. It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Yeagy, today with Michael Episcope. We have a great edition lined up for you today. We're going to be talking about real estate, especially real estate for wealth building. And my guest today is a former Chicago mercantile trader. And that's exciting for me because I spent some time in Chicago. My origins go back to trading, futures, options. I was even on a show with Ira Epstein way back when I was in college. And he was like, you know, all that. And I was on that show. So I've been investing for a long time. So it's really great to cross paths with a guy like Michael, who's going to maybe tie that into what we're talking about. He's the founder or co-founder of Origin Investments. It's a $2.3 billion real estate company, or at least they've done that much in transactions. And the cool thing is he can brag about the fact that he's never lost his investors' money. I wish I could say that, but that's a pretty cool thing to be able to say. And when you're in real estate, you can say that because you got a long-term perspective. It's great. So without further delay, let's welcome Michael Episcope to the show. Welcome, Michael. How are you?
Great, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Great to see you here. Why don't you tell us a bit about Origin Investments, what you guys do, who your ideal clients are, and then maybe we'll kind of branch off and talk a bit about real estate and how it can help people build wealth.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I'll kind of take you back to the beginning because you touched on the fact that I made my wealth in trading, and my partner and I, we've known each other since 2003, and we got together at that time really pooling our capital. We're more of a family office because the options for high net worth, ultra high net worth, we wanted to invest in real estate. We wanted to create this passive income. We wanted to take advantage, and it was sort of like two steps forward, one step back, and we're banging our head against the wall, and we just came together and we said, we can do better than this. You know, there's got to be, you know, kind of an institutional platform for investors like us. And there was nothing out there, right? It was dominated by the non-traded REITs, high fees, things like that. And even most of the good platforms out there, they matriculate to the institutional investors and sort of leave the high net worth behind. So we set out to build a platform for people like us. That was in 2007. That was sort of the vision. I can tell you that at that time, we didn't have a grand vision. We just wanted to do deals and make money. That was it, and do good things. And
that's how it starts.
Family, and it sort of took off. And today we have 2,900 investment partners. We have $1 billion in equity and many billion in assets under management because real estate is leverage. We operate four funds, and we have also a lot of RIA clients as well. So registered investment advisors, and really proud of what we've built. We've got 45 team members. We're here in Chicago. We only do multifamily. We build, buy, and lend in really what we call the smile states, which is the Southeast. It's enjoyable what we do and the people who we're helping. And everybody works really hard for their money. And for people like us, we're not in the wealth really accumulating or building stage. We're more in the wealth preservation stage, right? How do we take our money and keep it? And you're from the trading industry. I'm from the trading industry. And I saw so many stories down there about people who used to be rich. And those are probably the worst five words that you can ever utter, right? Falling from that mountaintop. And so like when we got into this, it was about, hey, nobody's going to be better stewards of our capital. Let's do this together. And it's been a great ride. And we're really proud of what we built.
Well, that's interesting. Like, you know, I'd like to unpack a little bit of that because it sounds like you're proud of what you've got. But when you say institutional kind of platform, what do you mean by that? What's a platform? How's that?
An institution like an endowment, a foundation, a pension fund. These are companies with a lot of money and they write big checks. So people who can write big checks can extrapolate great terms from sponsors, from people like that. When you come to the table with $50 million, you're getting a much different deal and much different caliber of sponsor generally than you are when you're coming to the table with $50,000 or $100,000 or even $1 million in those cases. You know, there's the rack rate that everybody pays, and then there's the institutional, right, which is sort of the real rate. And then there's also the customer service. There's the quality of the team. There's all of these things that go into creating that user experience. And we, we've just set out to really level that platform, democratize investing quite a bit, but mirroring it around that institutional experience, if you will, at scale. So when we go to the market, we are the institution. So, you know, we raise funds. Our funds are in excess of, you know, $300-400 million in some cases. So we are the ones who are representing ourselves, our money, the money of, and being the institution and extracting the greatest terms on the ground with partners around the country and building portfolios.
So speaking of your portfolios, you mentioned that you were doing a lot, only multifamily, right?
Yeah.
Which has been a hot market for the last 8 or 9 years. And so congratulations for being in that market. It's really a great market because we need more housing. And I don't think it's going anywhere, but that's what I think. What do you think? You're on the ground in the real estate business and you're in, you know, in the multifamily development. Is it still cranking away like it was 3 or 4 years ago, or is it slowing down because the Fed's hiking rates and that's affecting your cost of borrowing? What kind of things
can you talk about? Yeah, I would say look, at the 25,000 foot level, the fundamentals still look strong. There's a housing shortage. It goes back to 2008. We have not built enough homes. We have not built enough apartments in this country. The millennials are the largest demographic moving through right now. They're kind of aging out of the rental and aging into home buying. But when you start to move down a little bit and really look at what's going on with the fundamentals at the ground level, and you've got mortgage rates. Well, mortgage rates have doubled in the last 6 months. We've seen right. that. And what that's done is it literally has locked out 20 million Americans can no longer afford a $400,000 mortgage because mortgage rates today are 6%, whereas 6 months ago they were 3%. And you have housing costs that have gone up significantly. So your $400,000 home today does not look like the $400,000 home from 3, 4, 5 years ago, right? So you've got these things that are happening. And what that's done is it's really benefited the apartment side from the operational side, because you have all these trapped renters and you've got more who are coming in behind them each and every year. So from an operational standpoint, we've really benefited. But from a capital markets perspective, we are starting to see things cool down a little bit, because I personally believe we're in a recession. We're starting to feel sort of the beginnings of this, and you're starting to see occupancy drop just a tiny bit, like little cracks in there. But what we come back to is yes, you know, no tree grows to the sky, and you have to take calculated risk, be in the right market. We love multifamily. We like the fundamentals. You got to be in the right market, the submarket, and buy right. So one thing, you know, to understand in like today's market, we're not doing anything in what we call the core plus or value added space. Those are existing properties that you buy. You need to add capital to them to bring the units up to today's you know, kind of modern amenities and things. The problem with those deals, you're buying a 10-year-old deal that's 20, 30, 40% above replacement cost today. So we really have a barbell approach. We're lending and we're building, but we're not buying anything in between, because there is a distortion, just the same as used cars are trading for more than new cars. That will not last forever.
No way.
And that's kind of what's happening in real estate.
Sure.
And we've been on the sidelines. We have been a net seller in our previous funds. And so the only way to buy right in today's market is really through building and then protecting your capital through lending on that side. And that's all we're engaged in this market today.
Interesting. So you're not the buy a Class C property, fix it up, do a cash out refinance in 3 to 5 years, give their investors back their money, and then they just soak it up for the next 20 years. Or are you still doing some of that?
We're not doing any of that, but okay. We have. That was a previous strategy of ours. Sure. What we saw happening even in a pre-COVID world is we saw these older properties, and we were always in kind of Class B, moving them up to B plus, A minus, 15-year-old properties, things of that nature. But when you start looking at the math and you're like, look, we can build brand new for $250,000 a unit, and we're buying this 15-year-old property for $230,000, and then we've got to put $20,000 into it. So now our basis is the same, and we have to sell it at a profit. Like, this doesn't make sense. And so that distortion, even through COVID, has gotten even worse. We're seeing properties in existing. We just sold a deal in Denver that we built for $215,000 a unit. We sold it last month. This was one that kept me up. I don't usually stay up at night over sales, but this one kept me up because I was surprised it closed. We sold it for $420,000 a unit. Good the Lord. Replacement cost on that deal today, we could replicate it at 280, 290,000 a unit. So that today is 50% above what we could build it for. I don't, you know, I'm not going to throw stones on, you know, other people's business plans. They were a sophisticated buyer. They know what they're doing there. I think the risk there is asymmetric. If they're right, they're going to make, you know, 450 a door in 5 years. And if they're wrong, they're going to be selling it for, you know, 330, 340,000 a door.
Hey, it's Mark Yeagy here to tell you about our cash flow machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for 2-4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. And we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of that is it only takes about 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2-4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA from $111,000 to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io. That's cashflowmachine.io, and you can learn more. So square the circle for us here about, you know, we know that costs are going up as far as, you know, cost of money. We know the costs of building are going up, and are they continuing to affect? So that's the first question. Are they continuing to affect your cost of putting, you know, per unit a cost of apartment building? But third is, if all these costs are going up, doesn't that trickle down to the end consumer when you finally put a place into service?
Mark, one thing, it's really math at the end of the day. And if you think about multifamily, costs have been going up for 100 years.
It's true.
What we build for today is more expensive than, what we built for last year. And we would all love to build for. And I'll give you an example. If you go back to like 05, 06, 07, the worst real estate correction ever, by the time we reached about 2013, you could not replicate the prices that you built for in 05 at the height of the market.
Wow.
So one thing you can count on in this country is inflation and just this continued rise in replacement cost and construction cost. And that's been going on for decades. So that's nothing new. I think it's the pace that's really surprised people. I mean, over the last 2 years, especially in certain markets, because a lot of these stars that align. The great equalizer to all that, and this is what I was talking about, math, you have construction costs and you have revenue. And it's really the rental rates. And you're looking at that spread between what you can build for and what the property is going to be worth when you deliver. And that is called your developer margin. And as long as that is intact and you can believe in your rents and you don't think they're going to fall by 20-30%, and we stress test, we do everything, then it becomes, as long as we're in the right markets, we're building the right location, we're building a quality asset, we can quantify demand, we underwrite conservatively, you're underwriting, you know, cap rates conservatively. But that's one of the reasons why we've never lost money on a project either. We're not a volume shop. We look for quality. We're long-term holders. We are actually a little bit different, I think, than any shop out there in the sense that we are buy, fix, and hold. And not buy, fix, and sell, because we did that in our previous funds. And what we learned over the years is that real wealth is not created by taking great assets and selling them. You know, I always tell my kids this story. It's so funny. I talk about it. And I said, look, I owned enough Chipotle at $80 to like choke an elephant. And I sold it at $100. And they remind me all the time, right? That's not how you get wealthy, taking great companies and selling them. Same with real estate. The reason why you own real estate long-term is for continued appreciation, but also the cash flow and the tax benefits. And this idea that, you know, fixing and flipping real estate, you're wasting all of the greatest benefits of owning the real estate, which is that long-term appreciation. When you do the math, you're like, and by the way, this was an evolution, because we would sell properties and we were, you know, cheering and great IRRs, and our investors would say to us, you know, hey, that's awesome. Great. We did great. Why did we sell that? Like, why don't we just hold it? Why, you know, like, well, you know, I mean, but we had funds that were designed around that. And all of our new funds, though, are designed around building long-term wealth and holding properties for the long term, using moderate leverage and being able to withstand downturns like the one we're likely to see in front of us.
Yeah. We agree on that. And so from an institutional standpoint, you're not seeing a compression of that developer margin. You're still seeing, while rental costs are going up, even though development costs are going up, that margin is still staying roughly the same for you guys.
Yeah. And Mark, I'll give you an example. Like, so I'll go back to Denver, Colorado. You will see in the papers them sort of vilifying the real estate market because that's what journalists do. And so let's say, for example, the math I just gave you, we can recreate that development today for 290. Typically, what we're looking for is about a 35% development margin. And so, you know, on something like that, we would have to get around $380,000, $390,000 per door, you know, on something like that. And that market can still support something around there, right? It could come down by $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, you know, but what's going to happen is the person who bought it $420,000, when they sell at $370,000, it's going to look like a huge loss, and it will be to their equity. And that's what the papers will pick up. So for us, though, like when we're thinking about how do we protect our wealth, how do we preserve our wealth? Well, if you're buying a property at $400,000, I'll just use an example, and it goes to $350,000, you're losing money. Right. If we're building for $320,000 per unit with the idea that we're going to sell at $400,000, but then the market comes down to $350,000, we just have made less money. We haven't lost money. And so that's how we view the world as risk managers. And, you know, about, you know, really, I think one of the qualities of our funds and us and the latitude that investors give us is that we're agile. We can move in and out of strategies and say, look, we're not doing that. It's not good bet. We go on webinars all the time, talk about this. This is how we're going to place our money. You have to take calculated bets. I think we're right. But, you know, like somebody asked me, I was talking to a group of investors, and he said to me, he said, well, Michael, have you tested 9% interest rates? And I said, look, every strategy is, you know, can go through a 2-3 standard deviation. But honestly, if interest rates go to 9%, I hope you've got gold in your portfolio, because nothing in this country is going to work, including the federal government.
Yeah, just imagine if they raise the rates to 9%. Now what the service on the debt would be, right? It's staggering number. If they try to raise it to meet the CPI that they say is the CPI, right? I don't believe their CPI, but if they raise it to that, we're talking about printing another $3 trillion a year just to service the debt, 10%.
Yeah. Yeah. And a skeptic in me tells me that's not going to happen for that reason. Now, you know, everything we do is stress tested, and you can, but again, that you're calling a 4 or 5 standard deviation. But Mark, as you were talking, I remember when I was a young trader back in 2000, your short-term interest rates were 8%. My trading account actually collecting 8%, and I wasn't in the stock market, and that seemed realistically. Could we go back there? Certainly, but it doesn't feel like this year or the next year. If we do go into recession, there's never been a recession in the history of the United States where the 10-year hasn't come down by at least 150 basis points. So my guess would be that we're back at 2% before we see, you know, 4.5 or 5 from here in the 10-year.
As we speak today, we've got a way inverted yield curve, which is portending a major recession, as you and I kind of agree. But those usually figure out ways to fix themselves. So hopefully this will be a short-term deal, and the Fed will come in and do its thing, save the day, print more money, and drive my Bitcoin a lot higher.
Yeah, I don't think so this time. I don't think there's a Fed put. I don't think they can afford it. And it's kind of interesting because somebody was just making this comment. The younger generation, they've known nothing but V-shaped recoveries.
That's right.
Where the Fed has come in, and you've been around long enough. I've been around long enough. I remember 01. 01 was, I mean, the stock market went down. It took 18 months to hit the bottom. The Fed is not going to rescue it this time. And in fact, they're unloading their balance sheet, which is the opposite. So I think that right now they're saying, hey, we're going to have to endure a little bit of pain for a long time, and we could be in a prolonged. But what's interesting about right now, I say we're in a recession. There really hasn't been a lot of bad news except for the stock market. Everyone I know is having record years in small companies. So the bad news is probably 3, 4, 6, 8 months away.
Yeah, it's true. I had my best year in 2020.
And congratulations.
Could be another kind of deal like that, where we hear the, you know, the headlines are all that the things are bad, but the underlying economy is still okay. So, well, good. Listen, how can investors find out a bit more about you? I know your company is Origin Investments. Is that the place to go? Origininvestments.com?
That's it.
Okay. Well, that makes it easy. So go to Origininvestments.com if you want to find out more about Michael's offerings. Michael, anything you'd like to leave our audience with today? Something philosophical, something cool?
I will say this. I just read one of the best books I've read in a long time. It is a simple read. It is called The Psychology of Money. And it was given to me by somebody on my team. And I read it on a plane ride and I thought it was fantastic. Unbelievable lessons for anybody with money who wants to keep money. And it just talks about what it means to get rich. And there are so many takeaways in that book, but The Psychology of Money, highly recommended to anybody out there.
It's really good. One of my themes is that, you know, we just don't teach money in school, right? And we use it every day. We just don't teach it. And there's people like you and me that have to go out there and educate the public about what to do with their money. And whether it's somebody that's got 50,000 or, you know, 500,000 or 500 million, you know, that didn't happen in any kind of, you know, normal educational environment, unfortunately. So no, it's like the book you just mentioned. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and even in these educational environments, I think one of the best lines in the book is it juxtaposes all of these famous investors. And it's not about what you know, it's about how you behave. And that's what investing is about. Sure. And some of the smartest people in this world have gone broke. And you've got janitors who have died with, you know, millions and millions of dollars. And that's what the book is about, is just about the behavior that makes people successful. And one of the best reads I've had in a long time. So I read a lot of, you know, quarter through books and put them down. And, you know, this one I read all the way to the end.
It kept your interest all the way to the end. So that's great. That's great. Well, listen, you know, the kind of information you just shared with us shows that investors from all facets of life can learn something from you, learn something about the real estate market. The real estate market really is for everyone. I know you deal with some of the upper end, and that's important. But we all have access to real estate, whether it's a single family house, a duplex, or investing in a syndicated operation like what you guys have. So I want to thank you for your time, your wisdom. I really enjoyed having you here on this edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast.
Thanks for having me on, Mark.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.